You have just entered the Katie Ma Podcast. Keyboard plus mouse or die.
Hey guys, what's going on? And welcome to episode 20 of the KB Mod Podcast. Hope you guys had a good week. Got a chance to check out episode 19. It was pretty good, if we do say so ourselves. We got a little shorter, not shorter of a crew. I don't know if you guys actually got shorter over the weekend, but not as many people on as normal. I think John will be joining us later. We've got Dan, unfortunately, has the croup, which is never good. So he won't be joining us tonight. But we do have a special guest, which we'll get to in a little bit. But yeah, how's everyone doing this week?
Pretty good. Recovering from Thanksgiving.
Yeah, Thanksgiving. Everyone had a good Thanksgiving.
I'm Canadian. Yeah,
when do you have Thanksgiving, Alex?
It's in October. I don't know why. Yeah. I don't know what we're thanking, but I just eat the turkey.
That's good.
Be thankful for your bags of milk.
Well, I don't want to exclude our guest any longer. We have a special guest from High Res Studios who's going to be on to talk about Tribes Ascend with us here on the podcast. We're really excited about it and appreciate him coming on. If you want to introduce yourself right now, Bart, be awesome.
Hi guys. Yeah, I'm Bart Konigsberg. I am marketing and esports and competitive for High Res, who we make Tribes Ascend, and excited to be on and talk about the Tribes.
Awesome, man. Appreciate you coming on. There's a lot of excitement around this game from all of us here at KB Mod, and especially Brandon, who I know you've been talking to quite a bit.
Who's
a big Tribes head and been playing Tribes for a long time. So, yeah, we really appreciate you coming on. Typically, Bart, we talk a little bit about what games we've been playing and stuff during the week. So maybe I'll start with you. We were talking a little bit earlier in the pre-show, just talking about how you've been entrenched in the Tribes stuff, which I can imagine. But
oh yeah,
you get an opportunity to game other stuff as well.
Absolutely. I mean, I have to break up my Tribes playing with I've actually been playing a whole lot of Skyrim. As well as Dota 2, Diablo, Beta, and massive amounts of Tribes.
Awesome. Glad to hear the Skyrim in there. Got to get some time for that. I've been
you hardly hear about anyone playing Skyrim
these
days.
Yeah, that's rare.
Yeah.
It's rare nowadays. How many hours in, would you say, are you in Skyrim right now?
I could open Steam, but my guess off the top would probably be somewhere in the 40s.
Nice. You're a little ahead of me. I think I'm like 35, 36. So
I've spent the last about 10 hours probably not even like doing quests or killing anything, just grinding like all of my trade skills.
Yeah, yeah. Time is a way of getting away from you in that game. When you're not doing side quests, it's the grinding or getting lost in like one of the millions of caves.
Well, that's the hardest part about playing Bethesda games is like actually playing them, not just spending all of your time modding them and grinding trade skills.
Exactly. Nice. What about you, Alex? What have you been up to?
Well, I discovered a game named Bioshock for the PC. Finally purchased it on the PC.
Yeah.
It's beautiful. Been playing Skyrim. I have like 4 hours in, so I'm really far into that game.
You just got saved by the dragon, huh? Spoiler alert. At the beginning, you're not much farther than that, huh?
I've killed a dragon, actually.
Oh, you have killed a dragon?
I've killed a dragon.
Yes, you do.
And I can shoot fire from my hands, much like Bioshock, actually.
Bart, there's a running joke on this podcast, and with Alex, he just talks about Bioshock all the time. It's his favorite game of all time.
Mm.
So you'll have to excuse him. We'll reference it quite a bit. Ken Levine is his hero.
And I just, because I've been finding time to play video games more often now, I finally used Brandon's lovely beta key for this game named Tribes Ascend.
Nice.
And I've been playing that, and I got 11 kills my last game. That's pretty sweet for me. Ooh. That's a lot of kills.
Actually, pretty impressive. Double-digit kills is
pretty sweet.
Pretty good progress.
I have no idea how to ski well, but if I stay on the ground and shoot up, I kill things. So
that's sweet. Yeah, I got 11 or 12 kills in one of my first games that I was playing with Brandon, and he like complimented me, and I was like so proud of myself. He's like, wow. He's like, you're a good fragger. I'm like, yeah, I am.
So Brandon, he likes the cut of your jib, basically.
He does.
So I do like the cut of Scott's jib.
He does. I can't really ski or move.
He's got a nice jib.
Everyone here is jib worthy. This is wonderful.
Wow. Oh man. Well, what about you, Brandon? I know you've been playing. You played Tribes last weekend,
Yeah. I mean, I was at my parents' house for most of Thanksgiving, so didn't really get a chance to play much over my little 2 day break from work. But Tribes Ascend, pretty much played a little Battlefield 3, but Actually, you know, I still haven't bought Skyrim. I'm just going to wait until that goes on Steam sale. I just have too much to play. Like, I don't have time to play all the games that I want to play. And
it's overwhelming right now, man. I can't remember, like, it seems like sometimes it's feast or famine with PC gaming, and right now we are in a time of feast, and we are gorging. It is bad, man. CSGO, the CSGO beta is coming out tomorrow.
I know.
I'm playing Skyrim. I have Tribes. Too. I've got Blacklight. Dude, it's out of control.
I almost don't want a CSGO beta key, because then I just have one more game vying for my time.
Yeah.
I don't want a CSGO beta key because LOL CS.
All right, you know what, Alex?
We're going to get that started.
Here we go. Trolling CS every time. Awesome. Well, I want to get into the interview portion, Bart, a little bit, and just talk to you a little bit about Tribes. Really excited about this game, like we said before. And I was wondering if you could start out with maybe just giving us a little background, maybe about yourself and how you joined up with Hi-Rez, or how long you've been working there.
Sure. I started working for Hi-Rez about 9 months ago. I come from the world of marketing. I graduated from the University of Georgia, here in Georgia, where I live, with a marketing degree. And I forged my way in the business world, and then wound up at Hi-Rez kind of out of serendipity and coincidence. I just kind of blindly sent them an email saying, hey, this is my skill set, and I'm a really passionate, you know, gaming hobbyist, and, you know, I really like Tribes. This is right after they had acquired the Tribes IP, and I'm kind of just, you know, stayed persistent and eventually got a job. And so sometimes it just works that way.
Awesome. That's cool. That's some good background. Yeah, it did. So you were probably pretty surprised when they were like, when they give you the call for the interview or whatever, kind of kind of thing.
Yeah, it was one of those things where I was like, you know, I'm just going to be really like genuine and honest and just send a cover letter with my resume and just be like, you know, I really want to work for you. And then I got the email back like, you know, that's actually funny that we were looking for someone that just does exactly what you do.
Wow, that's awesome. That's good. It seems like that never happens in life. It's good when it happens once in a while.
Yeah, like that's like my one big win for life. I feel like I used my like everyone gets one. Like I used my one.
Yeah.
It was like I have no chance with like a gorgeous girl in a bar now.
Yeah, life doesn't let you go back and mulligan that and use it for something else, unfortunately.
Yeah, no. It's just like, no, you got video games. You don't get the crazy like way over your league pickup.
Nice. Well, it kind of leads me into my next question. So 9 months ago, you joined up with Hi-Rez, and like you said, they got the IP, I guess, right around that same time. Just from talking and, you know, with the guys that are developing the game directly and stuff like that, what made Hi-Rez and you guys want to make a Tribes game? What was the driving force behind that?
Well, I mean, our company is, you know, privately owned, and so our first game, Global Agenda, was really kind of, you know, was a lot of things, you know, kind of to its benefit and detriment in certain ways. And one of those things was Tribes. I mean, like the founder of the studio and a lot of the, you know, kind of high ranking design side guys were avid like Tribes fans.
Okay.
Had a big influence on the first game. And when we were going to look to like, you know, kind of what would be our next game, it was kind of like, everything just kept coming back to, you know, we could just kind of do a Tribes game. You know, we know about jetpack shooters, you know, from Global Agenda, and, you know, it was always really kind of influenced by Tribes in the first place. So, you know, let's just throw a, you know, offer out there. It was my understanding. It was, you know, this is about 2-3 months before I started, and then it was, you know, it just went through and it was full steam ahead. And yeah, they acquired, you know, the IP and started with announcing a game called Tribes Universe that was going to be a Tribes based MMO. Or,
right.
You know, is going to be that kind of had got tabled for Tribes Ascend as, you know, really a just proof of concept of Hi-Rez Studios and Tribes. And then it's kind of, you know, just become more and more beloved and, you know, really evolved into this, you know, the game that you see now. I mean, it's a labor of love and a labor of, you know, kind of long time, you know, I think it was like kind of the dream project a little bit during the development of Global Agenda was just like, man, you know, there's these games, you know, Team Fortress 2 and Borderlands and Tribes and all these games that influence Global Agenda. You know, I think kind of working on any of those for any of the people that were involved would have been really great. And it just so happens that we were able to acquire Tribes.
Nice.
So have you actually, I think we were talking, you said you'd played Tribes before. So have you played, you know, the prior Tribes titles competitively? And because you're kind of on the competitive esports side of Hi-Rez.
Yeah, I played Tribes 1. That was really when I was more competitive. I played with a clan called SMS of Steel Maelstrom back in the day, and on TWL, and they played Quake and Tribes and kind of all the big popular shooters of the day. That was really the team that I competed with the most. And then besides that, just pickups and filling in and all those kind of fun things. But yeah, I was involved with Tribes 1 for quite some time, and then moved over to Tribes 2, but my computer kind of just wasn't good enough at the time to really properly run Tribes 2, and so I kind of got out of it and then got back into Tribes 1 in college, and then Tribes 2 because it was, a more thriving community, and then kind of just rode that all the way. But yeah, I mean, I was like, talk about 40 hours into Skyrim, I was 40, yeah. 400, 500, 600 hours into Tribes 1 as a kid. I mean, it was like one of those things, stay up all night, wake up early before school to play. It was just a plethora of mods and all these things. And but it was always base CTF for me. That's really what it was all about.
Yeah, speaking of mods, that I was actually going to say, you name a clan that if someone played base, they'd probably recognize that name. Because there were so many mods, I don't know any of the big clans because I played Ultra Renegades, which is kind of a lesser-known mod. And so I know like a small subset of clans in the game, but it's like each mod had its own little sub community.
Yeah, did you ever play Arena? I played a little bit of Arena. I used to play with, I wasn't like with them, but I used to play a lot with the Crayon clan and Tribes 1 in Arena. That was their stomping grounds. That was, but yeah, I mean, I wasn't like a huge, like landmark figure in the Tribes 1 esports. I was like 9. When the game was out, but I was really into it.
Nice. That's awesome. Well, it's always good to hear, like you're saying about the guys who are really passionate about the game and love Tribes. It's kind of a labor of love. I think that's pretty apparent just playing the game. I know, Brandon, you've commented on that quite a bit, just about the feel of the game and how right it feels and similar to other Tribes titles, and especially Tribes 1. And so that kind of leads me into my next question. How important was it for you guys to capture the feel? Maybe not necessarily just the original Tribes, but the Tribe series in general, and obviously knowing how diehard the community is and what kind of pressure that is to come out with a game like Tribes Ascend. How did that all factor in as far as like the feel of the game and stuff like that?
It's the community is, both the best and the worst part about Tribes. That's just the fact of the matter. You could say the same thing, I think, about MOBA. And maybe a couple other genres, I would think maybe the Quake guys and stuff, those like that really, really gnarly, like late 90s, early, or not early, but mid to late 90s, like core group of those like really, really serious PC shooters. They're super elitist and they're like super evangelists for, their game as it was iterated 20 years ago. And it's like that's like a great kind of like driving force for, that sort of just idea of we have to make decisions. I guess that's really it. You have to make decisions, and then it's always good to have that background of like, we know exactly what our most hardcore guys want because it was made twice. the thing about the Tribes community is that even though the game was made twice and they're pretty stinking similar, if you're talking about at least Tribes 2 Classic, or I'm sorry, Tribes 1 Classic and Tribes 2 Plus and Tribes 2, Tribes 2 Classic, I'm sorry, and not Tribes 2 Base, but Tribes 2 Classic, there's not even parity between those two communities of what game does it right or how it should be done.
Yeah.
Much less, for any of the games moving forward or, any of the games moving to the side, like Aerial Assault. I mean, it's just like, there's so many different opinions and they all agree on, that Tribes was hardest and best when they played it and took the most skill.
Right.
And it's funny. And it's like anything you do, it's like that's what we loved was that you're ruining the game completely by saying it's not Tribes 2 HD Remix or it's not Tribes 1 HD Remix. It's, a new game that has a free to play, business model and, is trying to be accessible and, all these things, but also with a, focus on, it's just like that's a hard pill to swallow for those guys. But, I think they're coming around because they see, we're dedicated to everything that made Tribes great, speed, high skill ceiling, all those things, but it's just in a different package.
Yeah, and I think you kind of see that with a lot of games. I mean, like, I remember, I think we saw that kind of thing with every Counter-Strike patch that came out.
That's right, yeah, yeah.
You know, 1.3 to 1.4 and then 1.6 to Source, you know, it actually fragmented the community even.
Split
so,
in half, yeah.
Yeah, I think it's tough to get away from some of that. And like you say, you're trying to do right by, you know, just the fun factor of the game. And, you know, obviously you guys aren't going to try and mess it up on purpose.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's more to that, too. I mean, it's more than just the fun. I mean, it's the fun and the immersiveness and the attention to lore. And, I mean, I was really surprised when I got to Hi-Rez and I started having some conversations about tribes. And, like, the guys knew more about tribes lore than me. Mm. Like, I was like, there's some serious tribes nerds over at Hi-Rez. I can tell you that much.
Nice. Nice. Well, you mentioned the free-to-play model, and I did want to touch on that a little bit as well and kind of ask you, you know, how with games nowadays and so many games going to the free-to-play model and upcoming titles that have been announced that are going to that, why are you guys employing that model, and what kind of advantages does that give you guys over, you know, like a standard model of, you know, releasing a $60 game?
I think one of the the best answers, and this isn't, you know, anything that I've explicitly been told necessarily, but my opinion as a whole, the reason the industry is shifting and a lot of entertainment is shifting to the free-to-play model is because it's really, really tough to do any kind of piracy under that model. Hmm. Like, what are you going to steal?
Right.
You know, like all of the stuff that you buy with everything that you put money to in the game is owned, you know, is like server side. It's not like, you know, you can just hack. You know, you can just go grab a cracked copy of Tribes and, you know, run around locally.
Right, play by yourself.
You know, like, there's not, it's like, you know, it's kind of like the beauty of, like, subscription games. I think it's just like a natural evolution of the subscription game, which, you know, really took it over kind of there in the early 2000s.
Right.
It was like everything coming out was like, you know, $7, $15 subscription. L2 was just getting cracked and, you know, had no sales unless it was a huge title. And so that it's kind of like that pressure and that challenge of being an indie developer.
Right.
As well as, you know, self-publishing, as well as, you know, that's kind of what people want. Like, you know, a lot of people say, tribes aside, because, you know, the diehard tribes guys are just like, you know, no, we want the whole game first time right off. And I think a lot of people feel that way. But I think that by and large, people are familiar with that now. And that's just the way, you know, it's like PC gaming is free to play and console gaming isn't.
Yeah, it's funny how much that dichotomy seems to be kind of making itself, where you have a lot of big name games free to play, TF2 being probably the most notable, but then you guys with Tribes and Blacklight Retribution and you know, PlanetSide 2 coming out, you know, you got some big names really taking notice of the trend. To the point at which I'm not so sure it's even a trend anymore. It's kind of just where everything seems to be going.
Well, that's right, because, I mean, let's face it. I mean, all the games that are developed for PC are free to play anyway, because you can just go steal them. It's like, and, you know, I mean, it's like, you know, it's not like it's this big pink elephant in the room. It's just, that's just how it is. You can, anyone, any consumer can go steal a game. And unless it's just, it's here it is, it's free. I mean, the only way to monetize that is, well, here, just take it and then buy the little things that you know you want.
Yeah.
The stuff that you'd be like, God, I wish there was a better modding community for this game. For the crack guys that were playing on Tungle. You know, it's like, oh, you know, I wish I could get a, you know, a sweet hat for my guy in, you know, Sacred 2 that I cracked. You know, it's like that kind of stuff, like, is that, I think that's why you see that. I mean, that's just my opinion, but I think that's why you see that kind of industry trend. It just makes the most sense in this day and age.
That's interesting, because when we were talking, we actually had Blacklight, one of the Blacklight devs on, named Jared Gertson. I think I got his name right this time. I probably mentioned it again. It's Gertson now? Oh,
it's,
man.
Gertson. That's his last name.
Dude, it's I'm sorry, Jared. You hate me. But we had him on a couple weeks ago, and he had said, too, that's an interesting point that you raised, and I think it's a good one. And he had also said, too, just the ability to update your game and patch it really quickly and stuff like that was also probably a big draw. To this model, like, you guys have already released, I don't know, how many patches has it been? Just in the beta alone.
Like a patch a week.
Oh, goodness. it's pretty fast-paced.
Yeah.
I mean, there's definitely that, and that's why you really don't see it so much on consoles, because I think consoles are a little stricter about how often they let you update.
Definitely is, yeah.
So, I mean, there's some good things from the consumer side about the free-to-play move as well, I think, which is, you know, stuff like you're pretty much guaranteed ongoing support for games. Like, when it's dead, it's really dead. But if it's when it's alive, it's really alive, because that's how the publisher and the studio makes their money, is off of continuing to create content.
Yeah, so, I think that's kind of a good point that I think a lot of people maybe don't realize when a game announces that they're going to be free to play, is that you know, a game like Team Fortress 2 that essentially no one was really buying anymore because a lot of people already had copies of it. Well, when they make it free to play, that means that they can support the game for that much longer, and that ecosystem is going to live on. So the games that you want to play, if they're free to play, you know, the publisher has that vested interest in keeping that community alive.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of, you know, pros and cons for doing anything. And I think that just with where we were and where Tribes is and where the industry is, I think just free to play just made the most sense. I mean, how many people are willing to take a chance on a remake of Tribes for $50 or $35 or, you know?
Yeah, that's a good point.
It's like that title carries so much baggage. Mm. And just like, if you're a guy on a forum somewhere and someone's like, this game sucks, it's nothing but, you know, hit scan and the skiing feels like, you know, Empires of a Fallen Legion or whatever. You know, it's like, and you're just like, well, I'm not, you know, I don't want to spend $35 and find out this guy's right. But if it's free, you're like, well, you know, whatever. You know, it's a 3 gig download or whatever. I'm going to go check it out. Oh, you know, it's pretty fun. You know, I'll stick around. Oh, you know, maybe I'll buy a little gold. Oh, you know, and then down the waterfall.
Definitely. Yeah, the low risk, high reward side of free to play is, I think, one of the huge things, a great point of that's driving it. And exactly, that's exactly the stuff that goes through my mind when I'm looking at different free-to-plays. It's like, what do I have to lose? Like, this could be a great game, and if it's not, I just delete it. It takes 2 seconds, so.
And I think you're going to start seeing more and more of this kind of, like freemium taken even further, where it's more like, the game's free, and you get, a few things, and, you know, most of the content and a few things for free. And then, yeah, sure, you can buy everything individually, or you can just pay like $20 and just, you know, you have everything. Or, you know, like that kind of stuff, I think, is going to be more and more prevalent, where it's just like that pitch, once you're like hooked to that first 2 hours, becomes really, really sweet. Then when you're like, you mean I can have all those other things for like just one time paying X? Like, and you like forget that, you know, 3 years ago you were paying $60 to buy a game that's full featured. Now you're like, that's crazy. How can you guys, you know, do that? Like, sell everything just once. You know,
it really is. And I think it's so funny that you say that, because I found myself, I haven't bought the full Tribes thing that you guys offer in the beta, where you keep everything when it actually goes to the full version.
That's right.
And you get all the unlocks and stuff, which is a really cool idea. I think, Brandon, you have, right? You got the full
the VIP pack.
But it's like, you know, what? How much is that? Is that $20, I think, to do that?
It's 30, I believe.
It's 30 to do that. So it's like, you know, at the end of the day, you're still not playing. I mean, you're already playing the game for free. And then, like, it's not even, you know, it's not even a $60 full retail release. I mean, you're not paying, you're paying half of that for the same thing. So
it's crazy. I mean, I buy a $60 game, I play it for 30 hours, and I'm like, I got my money's worth.
Yeah.
But then, like, games like Han, I have, like, 400 hours in, probably. You know, like, I've been playing for like 2.5 years.
Yeah.
And, you know, I paid $30 for it. Plus, like, you know, maybe $15 I've put in for various, you know, contributions to, you know, just try to, you know, help support them. But I mean, it's like, it's, you know, it's like there's a crazy amount of, you know, variation in how people want to pay for games. But, you know, the consensus is, I think everybody wants to play them.
Yeah. Yeah. I think so. Definitely. I did want to get your take. I noticed just doing some research this past week, just about Tribes, and especially with Ascend, as far as the whole PC versus console issue, and not really frame it like that, but more, I don't think you guys have said for sure if you aren't going to be bringing it to the console side, or if it's going to stay PC exclusive, or you haven't ruled that out. Can you touch on that at all, or?
That's above my pay grade.
Okay.
No one's come to me and been like, Bart, we're not doing it.
Okay. All right.
Tell everyone we're not doing it, or tell everyone we are doing it. It's just, you know, I'm just not really included in that discussion of, that's, you know, business strategy stuff. But, you know, I can tell you that, like, part of the reason that you don't see free-to-play games on consoles is because they don't really like to do that you know, weekly content updates right. stuff. It's just, it's expensive for them to push it out to all the consoles.
Gotcha. Okay, cool. One other thing too, as far as like tough issues, I'm always interested to hear this from, you know, from within a company. It always fascinates me. Like, what have been some of the tough issues that you guys have had to work through? Obviously, you talked about with the whole community side, the double-edged sword of having a really hardcore community and following behind a game and that have really strong opinions. But what have been some of the things you guys had to work through in developing the game and that have been tough to decide, like, do we keep this in? Do we cut it? I mean, I'm sure there's a million things, but anything stick in mind?
I think one of the hardest parts of the process is, like, given the size of our studio and the size of our playtest, it's really hard to emulate what, you know, 16-on-16 will feel like in every situation. Mm-hmm. So that was, you know, that's kind of always challenging is, like, trying to, you know, step back and think about it. How does this interact with when there's 4 people in the map, when there's 8 people, when there's 10 people, when there's 32 people?
Yeah. You know,
you don't want to get into situations where you have, like, one guy playing CTF at 4 in the morning, you get in there with him, and he has some crazy exploit with, you know, whatever the heck, with Scrambler, you know, and he's just like, you know, you're like, you can never catch him. You can't even see him because he's using that stealth pack. Or using the scramble pack so effective, you know, it's like you got to worry about all of those things. I think that's challenging. And then specifically with tribes, it's, you know, because of the game is, you know, one of, if not the like premier game for like emergent gameplay, really right. defining it. So people have a history, especially like your high end guys of like, I'm going to try to hit this rock that's sticking out of the ground going a bajillion miles an hour because last time I did it, it kind of shot me in a weird direction, and I'm going to figure out how to do it so that 100% of the time it shoots me at a right angle going twice as fast. And then 15 hours later, they're doing it every time. So, like, that's one of the hardest parts about this game in particular is that because speed is king, like, little tiny changes to physics or interactions or, you know, little unforeseen things, like, you know, sometimes when you know, like, this isn't a real thing, but like, it's possible, you know, like you change something, you'd be like, you know, I feel like jump, you know, the jump button needs to be a little more responsive or something, and, you know, you do something to adjust that, and then all of a sudden, like, sometimes, you know, when you hit things going really fast and jump, it shoots you straight up instead of continuing your velocity, like, just because of how fast it's moving and like how the, you know, kind of physics are being calculated on the fly, you know, by the engine and all these fun things, that you get these little blips and little bugs become like, can become game breaking or can become like really, really sweet emerging gameplay. You know, it's like you're walking that fine line with tribes of like, do we take that out? Because it's, you know,
because one person will spend 15 hours just to do that.
Yeah. Yeah. That's, I mean, like there was an issue earlier on where like, if you like went through like just the very corner of something that was like slightly elevated off the ground, like it would just shoot you like 400 kilometers an hour. Right. And it's like, that's pretty neat if someone can figure out how to do that. But, you know, obviously that can't stand because that's, you know, quite obviously a bug, but there's other little things that it's like, I never knew that you could do that. Here's a good example. Early in the alpha, you were able to put, technician turrets on those like rings of the conduit on the backside of Crossfire. It was like no one ever, like, you know, I don't think anyone ever did it until, you know, we got some external guys in, they started doing it, and it was like, well, this is obviously broken. Like, it was really hard to shoot the turrets because of their placement. So, you know, and it doesn't really make a lot of sense for them to be deployable there. You know, there was things like that that it's like really hard to decide with tribes, given, because it's like, also it's like, well, if someone was just going 400 miles an hour, it doesn't really matter.
Right.
You know, it's like, it's always, there's this like shifting scale of skill levels and abilities to kind of exploit things that may be intended to help new players out necessarily could be things that are the most abused by your top end. It's kind of like the tax system where it's like the things that are meant to, you know, little loopholes for, you know, people that make $28,000 a year to get through, you know, you get Fortune 500 companies getting through and paying no taxes.
And I think that's probably one of the hardest things with tribes, especially because if you talk about your traditional shooter, you don't really have to worry about the physics aspect of it. And something that actually really draws me to tribes and other fast-paced games like Quake and that sort of thing, is that you do have to have sort of a movement skill set and an aiming skill set, rather than a lot of modern games, you know, you just have one or the other, typically just the aiming. One thing that I really found fascinating was I read that you guys were changing up the physics between different conventions. So like QuakeCon had a set of physics, and then maybe you slowed it down a little bit for Gamescom and sped it up a little bit for PAX. And so how have you guys been kind of tweaking throughout the alpha and beta process? And I guess specifically, what was the decision for you guys to run like a really long beta? Because we have seen games recently running kind of like betas that are kind of like demos and marketed, you know, for marketing purposes. What's your take on that? And what have you guys been, what has the beta process been for you guys?
There's a couple questions there. I guess the first one is, you know, were the builds changing from convention to convention? And yeah, they were. They definitely were changing. You know, pretty similar, but you know, there was definitely variations between the ones. Most of it, I think, between QuakeCon and PAX, it was mostly around, that one I think was around basically speed caps, I think was what changed between those two. Because there was a moment, there was a little time there where we were working on, you know, figuring out, kind of working through the best way to kind of balance a few different things, among them like heavy capping and like light compared to medium ski, and that, you know, there was a few things we were ironing out there. And so that was one of the big things that changed between those two, was that I believe at PAX there was speed caps on some of the classes. And I know there was differences in ability to turn at speed between those two conventions. That's all I really remember. But yeah, there were definitely, you know, there was subtle gameplay differences as well as just more features between the two, just because ongoing development. Mm-hmm. As to the beta process, I don't know, is this a long beta? Jeez, hasn't it been like a month?
Well, I guess specifically, you know, we had heard originally that you guys were going to try and release around Christmas, and I think that got pushed back to Q1 2012.
Gotcha.
I
mean, you know, it's still closed beta right now. So there'll be, you know, the remainder of a closed beta period and then an open beta period and then, you know, like a full on launch. But, you know, open beta is, you know, pretty close. Generally, when, you know, when you go into open beta, you're feeling pretty good about the game. So we'll see, you know, when it gets there, how we're doing. But I mean, I think, you know, there is a, you know, light at the end of the tunnel, certainly from our end. You know, that we can see as a, you know, kind of a clear date. We have goals and stuff. You know, I can't really obviously divulge those, but right. It's, you know, I think that the beta process is definitely more dictated by our desire to get, you know, the game finished, not around like some kind of, let's get it out there and get it in people's hands and get the buzz going and keep it exclusive. I mean, we've been giving away a lot of keys. You know, we want people in, we want, you know, the closed beta was just basically so that, you know, you can limit how many people you let in at a time so that you can really, you know, make sure you don't dilute your population and that, you know, you don't overload the server. You know, there's a lot of different things that go into how big the closed beta is. And then, you know, when open beta comes along, that's, you know, kind of, I guess, the sign that retail release is coming, baby.
I think so far, I mean, I've personally been really impressed with just the level of polish. And I've told these guys before that myself and John, another one of our podcast members, when we played at QuakeCon, I was just amazed that y'all considered that an alpha build, you know, because I didn't encounter like any game breaking bugs or anything, and really enjoyed myself when I played at QuakeCon. And that was, you know, that was almost three, four months ago now.
Sorry.
And it doesn't, like, that alpha build doesn't feel that much different than the build I'm playing now. You know, if I didn't know all the different changes that had happened, you guys had a pretty solid game 3-4 months ago, and it just keeps getting better. So I think I speak for all of us when I say that approach of, you know, basically developing to finish the game and not to hit an artificial timeline, that's definitely the way to do it. So we appreciate it.
Yeah, that's definitely something, you know, that goes back to just, you know, the passion for the craft of, you know, the game and the Tribes game. That's just something that, you know, our guys as a small independent studio have.
Yeah, it's awesome to see. It's funny. I was it was even just like the little things, the little touches, like when the giant dropship, Brandon. Remember when we were playing the other night? And like,
oh, yeah.
We noticed like for the first time that the shadow it cast across the entire map.
Yeah, on dry dock, that huge, the huge ship blocked out the sun at certain parts. Yeah, it was just amazing because it's one of those things that if you were just hardcore into the game, you wouldn't have even noticed because you'd be so focused. But I was just, you know, waiting for a flag to get returned, and I look and I tell Scott, I'm like, what? Did you ever notice this? This is crazy.
Yeah, there's a ton of, you know, like the art team is unbelievable for our game. I mean, I you know, big props to them. Obviously, Sean and Adam and those guys. I mean, they're Sean McBride, the lead art for Tribes. I mean, their stuff, you know, they just kill it. And that makes, you know, the skyboxes are really good, and you know, all the props are really nice. You know, it's just like everything that, you know, everything kind of came together on the art end, and then, you know, the physics is obviously an evolving thing. I mean, like you were saying, back to your point of that, you know, you played it at QuakeCon and then now playing it in beta, that it's, you don't feel that much different. But then you look at what happened on paper and you're like, yeah, there was a lot of changes to that engine. And then, you know, you look at like forum response to changes and outcry for the changes that got made and that kind of stuff. And it's like the end of the world every time anything changes. But, you know, as just someone who enjoys games and is like, yeah, I play Tribes probably back a little bit in the day. And, you know, I really like to play it. You know, you're like, it feels pretty much the same. I can go fast. I can get high and I ski. You know, it's like, that's two worlds again of Tribes, where it's like for you know, most players and most people, even, you know, kind of hardcore game fans, as all of us are, you know, small things can make a big difference and big things can make no difference. Especially in the world of Tribes, where it's like, you know, we added, you know, jump, and it was like, oh cool, thanks guys for adding jump, helps a lot. And then it's like, you know, we, you know, tweaked how well you can control yourself in the air, and it's like, why would you ever do this? Worst thing ever, worst change, game's broken, going back to Call of Duty, bye. You know, it's like, you know, it's like, so you never really know how anything's gonna be accepted, and you don't really know, you know, it's hard to tell just for like the guy playing the game's experience of like, you know, did he even notice that we let this guy go 10% faster when there were speed caps? Probably not. I mean, now there's no speed caps, but you know, it's like all those things.
Well, and I think that's one of the biggest things for me, at least, is that, wow, voice crack.
It's all right. You'll get through.
For instance, the speed cap, you know, there are a lot of people, because I check the forums every now and then, and there are a lot of people really wanting to remove the speed cap. And so you guys just did, you know, because you're listening to that feedback and you're like, all right, this is a beta. We'll remove the speed cap. Let's see how it works. And from my personal experience, I think that has been a good change. But just knowing that the developer is listening and willing to, you know, if the outcry is big enough that a lot of people really want a feature or a change, that you guys are willing to give it a shot and say, all right, let's see how this works.
Yeah, I mean, that's part of, you know, that's part of what beta really is, right? I mean, many companies and many, you know, it's a huge wide spectrum of things that could make it so that you can't make a change. You know, you don't have whatever feature in place to do it. You don't have the time. You don't have the money. You don't have the aptitude. You don't have the vision. You don't know that people are clamoring about on forums. Who knows what it is? In our case, and specifically in the speed cap thing, it was that there was an outcry, and there was like an overflowing amount of like rational discourse.
And that it's like never happened.
I know, and it's like that is really like. You know, besides, you know, lots of like, you know, long conversations about it and, you know, trying it out different ways and then, you know, kind of putting it out there and testing it. You know, that makes a big impression on like, on me at least. And, you know, as like, you know, I'm not really a community manager, but I do, you know, work with my little niche of the, you know, competitive side of it and the little forum that I manage. It's like, you know, if it's not people just yelling and screaming and you get this like crazy rabid crowd to be like discussing the merits of, you know, an acceleration cap versus a speed cap, and it's like, you know, all this rational discourse and some good points, and it's like, wow, you know, like, this isn't just crazy rabid fans, you know, wanting it to be exactly how it used to be. This is people that, you know, have thought about it, and it makes it much better, you know, to anybody out there listening that's a fan of a video game and wants to give a dev feedback. It's way, way, way easier to, like, go into a thread and look at, like, a discourse about something and pull points from it from both sides and then discuss both sides of it in a development meeting than it is to, like, go into flame wars and crazy, like, do not ship this game unless you ... posts. You know, something like that, where it's just like,
yeah,
you know, it's like if someone's just like, let's discuss this thing, and then, you know, there's six pages of discussion, and you can, and someone summarizes those points at the end, and someone may just go grab that and turn it out and take it into a meeting. I mean, that happens all the time.
Yeah, that's always got to be interesting to be dealing with that on a regular basis. Just the, I think it's crazy. I can't even imagine, like, dealing with that feedback where, like, you do one thing and then it's just, I guess at some point you have to take in what you can and then some stuff you have to ignore. Like, that's got to be, like, an overwhelming thing all the time, especially from passionate fans.
Yeah, I mean, you, like, I, you know, we say that we read the forums and,
right.
Like, dude, I'm telling you, man, like, half the time I walk past people's desk, if they're not working, they're looking at the Tribes forum on the That's Tribes
awesome.
Team.
It's awesome.
You know, and it's not just, you know, it's also like, you know, Tribal War and also, you know, the European mirrors for Tribes, Game Shrine, and, like, you know, everywhere, man, you know, Neowin, just video game forums, 4chan's video game board. I mean, like, people are, you know, we're actively seeking out feedback on Tribes as a development team. And, you know, there's plenty of times where I print things out or I forward forum posts to people. Or, you know, developers get involved on the forums because of things that players bring up. And then, you know, there's players that, you know, just don't ever want to be involved. And that's fine, too. But people really do look at that stuff on our end. I can't speak for any other studio, but I know on our end, like, we patrol those forums.
That's good to know. That's good to know. You don't always know if your feedback, I mean, well, it's obvious that the feedback's being heard, like Brent is saying, from the patching stuff, which is good, but it's awesome to hear that, you know, you guys are looking and actually paying attention, which it's just good. Like, it's funny, because, like, you know that, like, in one sense of your brain, but it's like,
I've
to hear
a
you say that and be like, hey, I see all my colleagues.
You know, I mean, it's one of those things, you know, it's like, you know, when it's, you know, someone may say something on the forum and then, you know, they get all pissed off because they never see it implemented. But what really happened was they were like, you know what? You need turtles in your game. And someone was like, look at this post about turtles. And then they were like, you know, it'd be really cool if we had a, like, sea turtle skeleton washed up on the beach. And they're like, you know, that's a really cool idea. You know, let's put that in as an art thing. When they were talking about some kind of, like, you know, turtling strat in Tribes, you know, and it's like, you know, you never really know, like, what influences, but, you know, people read it. You know, everyone's interested in what the community has to say about the game they make. Anyone that tells you, you know, that they don't are lying, and I don't know why anyone ever would. It'd be just a terrible PR move, but, you know, we do. We listen to it, and, yeah, I mean, it's one of those things, like, you gotta like, remember and realize that, like, literally 9 months ago, I was doing this for fun. Like, I was, you know, I'd be like, oh, sweet, some guys want me to be on a podcast with them to talk about video games. Like, why did they want, you know, I'm glad I posted on that forum. You know, like, that's
right.
That was my life, you know, like, less than a year ago, it was just being an enthusiast and being, like, down in the Tribes trenches and, you know, being on the, you know, forums of high-res studios on the Tribes Universe board being like, boy, I sure hope they don't take out the spin fuser. I used to troll people on forums with, like, an image that said there'll never be an HD remake of Tribes that doesn't ruin the physics.
Wow.
Like, this was, like, a year ago I was doing this, and now here I am, like, telling people, like, don't worry about it, the physics are nice. And the graphics are great, too.
Nice.
I've got a question, as I tried to say earlier.
Sorry, cut you off, Alex.
So what I was saying, no, I'm kidding.
Speaking of being video game enthusiasts, we, all of us on the podcast, have a background in YouTube video making. And I'm sure you're aware of Minecraft and
sure.
the explosion that it's had as an indie game developer and the success it's had. And I was wondering if you could speak specifically from the esports side or just marketing in general, but do companies like Hi-Rez now take into account the impact of a medium like YouTube when making or getting the name out there or just getting footage out there for people to see?
Talk about a long beta. YouTube and games, yeah, I mean... Yeah, if you look at our Facebook page for Tribes Ascend, every day we post a new user video. I mean, that's really, like, it's huge. Content creation is the lifeblood of any competitive game. I mean, you look at any competitive game, it's the community. I mean, that's one of those things where it's like, I almost like feel stupid talking about it because of how obvious it seems to me. Coming up from like really like in competitive gaming, you know, coming up from like an early FPS into like MOBA kind of standpoint and seeing, you know, what communities work and which ones die and which ones are still alive. You know, it's like, it's community content. That's like, that is the game. I mean, that's the whole thing. If you have a community that's making awesome stuff and you have kids sitting in their, you know, in their room or in their basement or in their living room, and they download Tribes Ascend and because they saw a video of, you know, XX Killmaster XX, who's the number one player in the world, doing a 17 second cap without hitting the ground on Bello Omega. And then they just go and start practicing that over and over and over again and going back and watching the video and doing it until they can. And then they're doing the, like, there's 10 seconds left and I'm the only guy, you know, close to their base. Can I do it? Michael Jordan? Like, are you kidding? Then they make a video about it. That's the whole thing, man. Like, I'm getting riled up about it because that's, you know, that's the passion that I have for esports and for Tribes and for, like, what I think it can be, because the game is, it's fast. It's not twitchy. It's, you know, a new kind of vector for competitive sports these days. It's spectator friendly, you know, it's shiny and big and fast, and it's got a ridiculously high skill ceiling. So it's like all of these things, I think, you know, really can, those kind of like Michael Jordan moments can really happen in Tribes, and I think it's going to make for a really awesome YouTube community. I mean, there's already some pretty sick, like, just frag videos out there, but, you know, I'm anticipating and encouraging, you know, we want to do, like, have full community content for every class that, you know, we link to. Be like, you want to see how to play Soldier? You know, click on this, and it shows you the 8 YouTube videos that people have made for Soldier and that are ranked. Or, you know what, you know, it's like, that to me and that to us, I think, is a really, really huge piece of it, is what can your community do for you? I mean, that's kind of like the business way to look at it. And then, you know, kind of from the enthusiast side of it, it's, you know, that's really what makes the game. That's what makes your players, you know, continue playing, and that's why they're sponsors, and that's why you can monetize that content. That's why you can have, you know, a YouTube channel that's dedicated to Tribes that, you know, makes some dude, you know, $65 a week in ad revenue. Or, you know, he goes all the way and he does a full like Tribes cast treatment, and all of a sudden, you know, he's getting 3,000 views on his video. I mean, it's like, or 3,000 concurrent viewers on a live stream of the Tribes game. You know, but that doesn't happen. It takes a good game, and it takes, you know, a commitment to esports and the developer, and it takes a high enough skill ceiling to actually have players be better than others. But besides that, I mean, that's all like, okay, I took this ball and I pushed it off the hill. You know, and then if it's going to flatten out at some point, and it's going to take the community that's going to push it over that next hill that really gets it on its feet, you know, on its way down to the glory of the valley below.
Awesome. And you were getting me excited talking about 17-second caps.
Oh, man, the Michael Jordan reference gave me chills. Oh, yeah.
But awesome. Speaking of that, you kind of mentioned, and by the way, we have John with us now.
Oh, we do. Yes.
Hi.
Hi, John.
Hi.
This is Bart, John.
Hi, John.
Hi. I work late. I hate my life.
You kind of started to mention about the competitive and esports side of it and how the community, you know, kind of drives a lot of that. And given that you are kind of the esports specialist, I wanted to see if you can talk about how Tribes lends itself to being a competitive game. And you've kind of already talked about it with the high skill ceiling and all that. So I wanted to ask you specifically, you know, I'm sure you've seen on the forums some questions about balance and fairness and that sort of thing with the unlock system, where you unlock loadouts or pay for them, and then you have to, like, play to unlock the skills and perks. So from your perspective, how do you see that changing at all to make kind of a fairer competitive landscape?
Yeah. I mean, this is, you know, it's public, but it's just not very well absorbed by people that, you know, either, like I've said it, I try to say it everywhere I can, but basically that for anything that is like a high-res sponsored thing or is a LAN event, a finals, so if it's like, you know, the $500 high-res studios third Friday of the month Tribes tournament, and you play in it, you get an account that has everything.
Okay.
All the classes, all the skills, all the perks, everything. If you get a private server and you use competition rules, so it is technically a competition server, that is bring your own gear. So for scrims and pickups, it's bring your own gear. If it's anything that's an official tournament or is sponsored, it's, you know, you, or is, you know, at a LAN or any of this kind of stuff, you'll get a full account with everything.
Okay. That's good. I didn't realize that, but I know that,
it'd be pretty unbalanced to like, just be like, nope, the team that played more is going to, you know, have access to better stuff. Just, you know, at the, you know, at DreamHack winner, here you go. Deal with it.
Yeah.
Nice. Well, so you had kind of talked about the third Friday of the month tournament and that sort of thing. So what if you can speak to it? What kind of stuff do you guys have planned to cater to the esports community once the game is launched?
I got all kinds of stuff, man. That's like that is really like I'm pushing forward so hard on getting this stuff organized. I mean, we'll be making some announcements here in the next month. Probably that we'll answer a lot of these questions, but we're, you know, forging ahead with partnerships, and we're, you know, doing everything we can, talking to, you know, I'm trying right now to help broker relationships between sponsors and teams to get a professional gaming circuit together for Tribes.
Awesome.
If nothing more than show matches to begin with, but I mean, it's, you know, I'm going to do everything I can to make sure it happens, and that is like, you know, in terms of dev buy-in, that's, you know, we're all the way there. Observer support, tournament features, this is all stuff that's, you know, scoped and planned. So,
awesome.
You know, it's all coming, you know, as much as we possibly humanly can to get, you know, all the support that we can fathom with the help of the community to make playing, broadcasting, shoutcasting, streaming, watching.
Wow.
Enjoying Tribes to be, you know, as good of an experience as it possibly can be, and as, you know, both like that that people can understand it, and that, you know, you have the tools in hand to explain it as a caster.
That's actually really awesome to hear, because I know probably a lot of our listeners, that's music to their ears with so many games, you know, not really being cognizant of that type of thing, and just how much it affects the community, like we were talking about, and kind of the hardcore fans. And so it's good to hear that you guys will probably put a little more thought into it than Brink did.
Right. Well, I mean, there's only one thing that converts like a really, really hardcore nerded out player that makes them into like a professional player, and that's professional players. The only thing that takes someone from like an enthusiast that spends all kinds of time to like someone who's just rabid and like constantly wants to just do nothing but play the game and better themselves and eventually wants to compete, it's like being able to watch people compete. I learned how to play MOBA games from watching professional teams do it. Like, I didn't play Dota. I started with Heroes of New Earth, and I exclusively learned how to play that game by watching HanCast. I don't know if you guys are familiar with that, but like that's like just shoutcasting for Han. And I watched Loaded and Five and We Heart Pigs and all these early teams just duke it out. Didn't even really know what the heroes did, just watched them do it and was like, I see how to do things. Same thing with Tribes. I mean, I learn things every time I play the game, just watching other players do stuff. I learned today that I can get destroyed by the assault rifle. Just nonstop. I was getting torn apart. And like, I didn't really give it that much respect before. Like, I knew that it was powerful, but I just didn't quite exactly know how effective it could be at the mid range as a chasing tool for someone who's really, really accurate, and I got torn up. I mean, eventually, you know, you're able to work around it and everything, but you learn things about Tribes, and there's no way that you're going to know. And, like, part of what, kind of going back to the original question of, you know, how is it best as an e-game and balance and all these things, it's like, when you look at Tribes and what makes Tribes unique from an FPS perspective, is that you can really have strategies in Tribes that go beyond kind of general strategy, which is, I think, a lot of FPS is more like, we're going to try to hold East. You know, that our primary goal is we're going to hold East because it's worked for us before. We're going to have, you know, this ace player down this alley, and our general goal is going to be to kind of creep around. I think in Tribes, you'll have a lot more of that, like, we're going to run a two juggernaut heavy offense set with Pathfinder midfield. I want a Doombringer on the flag, two technicians, and a sniper. You know, it's like, oh, no, that's not working. You know, we need to shift that up. We need to go more defensive. Let's bring one of those heavy offense back, turn that other heavy offense now into, you know, he's going to be light clearing, and then we'll also have our, you know, a medium capping because they've got a really good sniper and needs more health to get out. You know, it's like there's this whole kind of like ebb and flow and like organic kind of gameplay and strategy that can go on within tribes, specifically as an esport, which I think is going to be really neat to explore.
Nice. It's funny hearing you talk about it. It's just like, if you guys listening can't tell that this guy's passionate about the game, yep. Just I don't even know what to tell you.
It's in good hands. It sounds like it's in good hands, especially the esports side. That's awesome. All right, well, we do want to touch on some new stuff, but we really appreciate you coming on, Bart, and talking about tribes, especially about the esports side of it. It's great to see you know, such a focus and a company putting a focus on the esports side of things. I think it's definitely a community that gets neglected a lot of times.
We need more FPS games on the esports side. That's the big issue. There's fucking none. None.
Yep. So
I'm so excited to be part of something that's not a Twitch shooter that's going to be played competitively.
Yep. That's awesome. Well, feel free to stick around, Bart. We're going to hit up just some new stuff that's been going on this week and then do some Twitter questions. So we'd love to have you stick around for the Twitter questions. Those usually get pretty interesting. So up to you. But yeah, real quick before we move on, did you want to let people know as far as, like, I don't know if you guys were doing any, as far as the beta key giveaways or the easiest way, they could get into that. I know it's going to open beta soon. And then as far as like maybe the website and stuff with the hit up, I want to give you
that. Sure, yeah. For beta invites from our end, I mean, we're working with really like every major video game media partner. He's going to be doing giveaways at some point if they haven't done it already. So, you know, Curse, IGN, Kotaku, all the way down the line.
Right.
Just keep an eye out there.
Maybe KB Mod.
KB Mod as well.
Maybe KB Mod. right. No, yeah, we can definitely, you know, arrange something for your listeners.
Awesome.
And, you know, going and begging on the forum sometimes works. People sometimes are just like,
well, you guys read the forums. You've already been.
Yeah, you know, you never know. Stranger Things. I mean, I gave a guy a key that wrote a song about wanting to be in Tribes Ascend. But he embedded a YouTube of him playing a 2-stick guitar and, like, really getting into it.
Nice. Awesome. All right.
But yeah, and so website is tribesascend.com. You can go there and, you know, see all the fun stuff. And but you know, as like a if you're listening to the cast and you never heard or cared about Tribes Ascend, I would encourage you to go to YouTube and just search and just watch some video of what happens when you get people going fast, and then you get 32 of them going fast trying to capture flags on some distant planet.
Well, none Definitely. Of these podcast members have made Tribes videos.
Yeah, I have one rendered and ready to upload. Thank you very much.
Alex.
Yeah, I've got like 30 hours of footage. Nice. But yeah, nice. All right. Yeah, thanks, guys. Thanks for having me. It's actually getting pretty late Eastern time for me.
It is, yeah, definitely.
I can make more Tribes tomorrow, so I'm gonna head out. Thanks a lot for having me, and let's stay in touch about future podcasts and giveaways.
Definitely. Awesome. We definitely
thanks, Bart. Appreciate it.
Hi, gentlemen. Thank you much. Have a nice evening. Bye-bye.
All right, and that was Bart from obviously Hi-Rez and Tribes Ascend. He's the esports guru, or I don't know, he's got quite a long title. So as you can tell, he is passionate about his game and knows his stuff. It's awesome to hear. So, yeah, I mean, like he said, if you guys haven't checked out Tribes Ascend, just from listening to him talk about it, you know, check it out. It's free. It's really fun to play, and, you know, I don't know what else we can say about it. It's good.
Scott fucking sucks at it.
I don't suck. Brandon, do I suck?
No, I will say that Scott is pretty impressive so far.
Have you ever been yelled at by Brandon? Is that that's
you know, I haven't met Brandon's rage, actually.
we were too busy staring at the skybox.
Yeah, at that giant ship coming across with the shadow. It was epic. So yeah, so definitely check out Tribes when you get a chance. You know. And let's get into the new stuff.
We now interrupt your scheduled programming to bring you an urgent broadcast from the front lines of America.
We are running, well, we're almost an hour in, but there was a couple things I definitely wanted to talk about as far as that goes. The big news today was about AMD. Dan posted an article about they are no longer focusing on the desktop market. And they basically said, we're shifting our focus away.
Basically, they waved a white flag.
Yeah,
what happened.
Said we're done.
Well, I mean, Bulldozer kind of already was a white flag, so this just made it official.
Yeah. So, just getting our reactions from that. I can actually read you the exact quote here from the article. This is from Mike Silverman, who was a spokesman for AMD. He said, "We're at an inflection point. We will all need to let go of the old AMD versus Intel mindset because it won't be about that anymore.
Yeah, so, well, the winner never says that.
No, and like John said, the white flag is waving proudly. Or, I don't know, proudly is the good word. But
I can chuckle about it a little bit while having two AMD GPUs in my PC right now.
Yeah.
The reality of the issue is that having no competition can promote laziness from somebody. I don't think Intel will get lazy. But there's always that possibility that innovation will slow down after not having any competition. Like, 'cause if you look at the improvements from the first generation i7s, then the Halems, and then you look at Sandy Bridge now, and you look at Sandy Bridge Extreme, look at what Ivy Bridge is going to be. It's just, there's always this innovation almost biannually solely because they do have a company competing against them.
Right.
That company's not there anymore. What happens? Do we still get to see that? Because I like to spend $1,000 on a CPU every once in a while.
I think that Intel is still going to innovate because they have to sell, I mean, they still have to sell us new CPUs. So they have to make it worth our while, unlike AMD with Bulldozer. You know, there's no reason for really anyone to be buying Bulldozer chips. And so Intel is at least going to need to make sure that we're going to want to buy their next, you know, the next best thing. The thing that has me worried is the price aspect of it, because we've already seen now that they're segmenting their chips to the regular versions and the K, or the unlocked versions. And I'm afraid that we may start to see more and more segmentation, because I think most people know that, like, a lot of Intel's chips are, you know, the highest model with either cores disabled or just features turned off. It's actually Intel deciding that they're going to turn things off in chips that coming out of the fab are more capable than when they hit your PC. So Intel's going to have a lot more leniency there.
Yeah, I was talking to Dan too about this today earlier. You know, after reading the article, and like, he has the same concerns, obviously, the price stuff. And I said I think there's going to be a company with enough capital. We were talking about this, like, you know, you have to have a ton of capital to be able to get into just the whole manufacturing side and everything to get into, you know, making CPUs. And, you know, I said, who knows? I mean, I don't know. I think there could be a wild card or someone could jump in here. Maybe not right away, but I can't imagine that someone's going to look at the market with AMD going out and saying, you know, there's an opportunity here to make, you know, good chips that are cheaper. And someone's going to be looking, you know, people are going to be looking for that, for this budget build and stuff like that. Like, I can't imagine someone's not going to come along at some point. I was joking with Dan. I said, Google's going to get involved. You're going to have, like, the Google 7000K or something coming out at some point, or, you know, architecture on that side. And I think it's a possibility. Like, I, you know, this is all just conjecture. I don't know. But I don't know. What do you guys think about that? Do you think that we'll see someone come in and try to fill that niche?
So you mean you don't have an inside source that Google is going to start fabricating?
All right, you
CPUs?
Know what? I'm saying it here first. You heard it here first.
Ken Google's Levine's going to start making some.
The Ken Levine chipset? That'll be great.
I definitely think we could see another player come in, just because the AMD's fabs, you know, they've already spent the money on them. They're already there. So I think there's definitely potential for those to be used in a different way. And I mean, AMD is still, I think, saying they're going to focus less on the desktop market. I mean, I think they're still going to iterate desktop chips. I'd be surprised if we saw AMD just not releasing x86 CPUs. But I mean, basically, they've just admitted what we already knew, that they aren't focusing on the desktop. And I'm guessing that's not like a newfound attitude there.
Right.
You know, that has to have already kind of set in months back.
Yeah, well, probably it started setting in right after the Bulldozer realization, when that came out and was an absolute disaster and benchmarks were just not even beating their older chips.
Yeah, I'm sure heads are rolling over there.
Yeah, for sure.
I think they knew it was coming. I don't think anybody was surprised at the company. I think the reason they pumped it up so much is because people are going to fucking order them before they even look at benchmarks. As soon as they come out, they're like, all right, I'm buying this shit. And then they probably sold a ton of chips, and then people got them, and they were like, fuck me.
Yeah.
And I don't think you can usually return CPUs, can you? So once they buy it, they're done.
You can return anything to Newegg, dude. Anyway, well, that's another story.
You can. My buddy Rick crushed the pins in his CPU.
Yep.
And he was just like, I messed this up. They're like, all right, send it back. He didn't even tell them it was broken. He told them that he messed up. And they were like, okay.
Yeah.
But he got a refund?
Yeah, no, they let him return that one and gave him another one. So they let him RMA it.
Yeah. I told the story before. I accidentally stepped on a motherboard during the build and like cracked tons of transistors and stuff on it. I said that it came like that. You know, I didn't tell them I did it. And
were you trying to install your 212?
Yeah, tripping over your failure on your 212?
Yeah, I was trying to. I was literally trying to step on it to put it into place. So, more news this week. Tomorrow, actually, or today? It's 12 o'clock right now. The Skyrim patch 1.2 is hitting PC. And Xbox 360, but we don't care about that. And it fixes, you know, quite a few issues, it looks like. They haven't totally redesigned the actual GUI or user interface, which is unfortunate. But I said in the article that I posted, you can use the escape key, which is fantastic, to exit menus. Who would have thunk it that you can now do that? So that was one really major annoyance.
That's a feature.
That's a feature. Yeah, it's a feature. So... and a few other things to note on that.
CSGO.
Yes. Yes. Just to note on that patch note, CSGO is actually in these patch notes, John. Which is
yes.
But Dragon Corpses, there's a problem with them not cleaning up properly. I've had this issue too. I know Dom has as well, where dragons like sometimes won't attack you for some random reason. They just won't land no matter what you do. That stuff's fixed. Yeah. So it looks like it's going to be actually a pretty extensive patch. So. I'll be interested to see. I mean, I haven't run into a ton of bugs. Hopefully this patch will fix the absolute ridiculous amount of just the game closing and crashing, like, instantly for, like, no reason. Often when you go through different doors.
I was in a cave and I sneezed and it closed. True story.
Your sneeze caused it, or you...
No, I'm sure it was the sneeze. I'm a god.
The sneeze caused it, yeah, definitely. I thought you meant your character sneezed, and I was like, wait, you can't do that in Skyrim. That'd be pretty immersive.
My orc can, but you wouldn't know about that.
Oh, you're an orc in the game? Nice.
Mm-hmm. I gotta say, those kinds of issues are shocking to me, coming from the studio that put out Fallout 3 and New Vegas.
Mm, yeah, absolute. Not console ports at all on PC. yeah, no. But, I mean, overall, like, performance-wise, it runs great. It's just that constant crashing bug that is really annoying. Like, you have to set your quick save to, like, every 5 minutes, and then I'm also probably hitting F5, like, every, like, 30 seconds, to be honest. Because at any point, it might crash, so hopefully that'll fix that.
I like bread.
What kind of bread are you eating right now?
Huh?
What kind of bread?
Fucking, it's wheat bread, but it has, like, this cheesy crust on the outside. It's, like, sprinkled with cheeses when it's baked, apparently.
You fancy, huh?
Me hungry.
Let me do my story.
Nobody cares about your story.
I want to do my story, okay. So here we go. First news story I've ever done. I don't know why people like this game, but Assassin's Creed is coming out.
Repetition's,
you know,
fucking legit.
I know, it's really good. So Ubisoft released a survey to some fans asking where they would like the series to head geographically. And I'll just list them off here. Medieval China, Victorian England, Ancient Egypt, the Americas, invasion of the Spanish conquistadors, the confrontation between British colonists and Native Americans during the American Revolution, overthrow of the Tsar Empire by the communists, the warlord battles in feudal Japan, and ancient Rome. Those are the ones. You know what? Brandon is... I'm just going to let it out here. Brandon's typing in the Skype chat that it was a riveting story. You know what? I wrote one article this week, and I wanted it to be heard. So
that was good.
You AC fans are in the loop now.
That's good. You wrote that article, and it got 4,000 views.
It got 4,000 views.
People definitely like Assassin's Creed.
I'm feeding
Creed.
All of your families with that single article, so I don't know why I get my back. I'm done. I'm out.
Tell them all about WoW 4.3 patch this week.
Yes.
Big time WoW patch. I'm actually logged in right now, just dicking around with that. Apparently, my account was using like a credit card that I haven't had for like 8 months. But it got closed this morning.
So oh, yeah. Brandon emailed me. Someone spent $10,000 on your credit card or something?
No, I misread the invoice. Luckily, it was only $1,100.
Oh, well, that's still.
But still. But I got to pay for it.
I was going to ask, because you said your TV was still bigger. So I was wondering why your TV cost more than $10,000.
Yeah, it showed me what was purchased, but the number on the invoice was actually wrong, like on the top. But in the total balance, it was correct. And I just looked as like I didn't buy anything, so I looked at what was charged and the number next to that was wrong. But then at the bottom it was correct. So I was like, okay, that's fine. That won't kill me. But yeah, it was like a 47-inch 3D TV. Who buys 120 hertz? If you're gonna buy a 3D TV, get 600 hertz or fucking kill yourself. Seriously.
You don't even have you didn't even get a smart criminal with your credit card. That's unfortunate.
Yeah, there's 600 hertz 3D TVs. You at least want 400 hertz. 420, I think it is. Gone, just smoke weed.
Where's Dom when you need him?
Yeah. He's totally fucking baked right now.
He probably is. Good old Dom.
He's working on the puzzle basement and the KB Mod Minecraft server. Go check it out.
Yeah, definitely. All right. So the other thing I want to touch on is the piracy comments from Ubisoft. And
speaking of Ubisoft and Assassin's Creed.
Yes, exactly. This is that is a great segue. Thank you, Alex. It actually worked out perfectly.
Mm-hmm. So despite it was Brandon's, you cocks.
Despite Brandon's sarcasm. So basically, once again, Ubisoft shitting on the PC crowd. And what is interesting is what Bart was talking about earlier. I didn't know he was going to take the conversation of free-to-play stuff into the direction of kind of arguing the anti-piracy side, which is a good point. I didn't really think about that. But Ubisoft always, as is typical, takes it, you know, just one step massively further.
Always playing the victim.
Always playing the victim, and says that basically 95% of... I got to find the exact quote.
When I read that, I actually laughed out loud.
Yeah,
95, he says, because we know... So this is the Ghost Recon Online producer, and it's going to be a free-to-play game, and the producer of the game said that essentially we decided to make it free to play because we know that 95% of our consumers will pirate the game. I mean,
95%.
Yeah, I don't mind them making it free to play. Right. I mean, we talked about all the merits of free to play. Like, there's nothing wrong with a game being free to play, but it's like a backhanded comment. You're saying that 95% of us are pirates? That would basically mean that all four of us sitting in this podcast are
I couldn't
pirates.
Tell you the last game I pirated.
Yeah.
I couldn't fucking tell you. I might have been like maybe
Crysis 2.
No, I bought Crysis 2. I think
that's
the original Dead Space, and then I bought it.
Mm.
Like the same day. I was like, I don't think I can stand a third person shooter. I think it's going to make me sick. So I may or may not have stole it. And then I played it. I was like, this doesn't make me sick. Okay, I'm going to go buy it for $30 on Steam.
Yeah, I mean,
release demos, developers. If you release demos, you'd probably have less pirates. If you release a demo of the game and people get to experience the game and they actually like it, they will buy it. We're not looking to steal things from you. Nobody is. There's very few people who solely pirate games. Razer i7.
I think it's funny that they cite this. You know, you hear these crazy numbers, 90% and 95%.
Right.
But there's as we posted in the article, there's no way to actually quantify that stuff. And that's because they're not actually trying to figure out what the percentage is. And it's obviously not 19 out of 20 people. I mean, that's just ludicrous.
To me, that doesn't put that on us. That puts that on the game developer. To me, that sounds like we don't make games worth buying. I don't even offense to that, because it's like if 95 people, if almost 100% of people decide your game isn't worth paying for, that's not on us.
That's what I thought was kind of funny. Like when I hear Ubisoft say that, you know, honestly, it's possible that 95% of people pirate Ubisoft games, but that's not an industry wide thing.
Yeah, that might be specific. You know, if they're pulling their actual numbers from Ubisoft, how about they take a look at themselves and say, "What the fuck?"
Yeah, the
are
only
we
reason
doing?
they pirate Ubisoft games is because they have to fucking pay for the DRM internet they need to play the game in the first place. So they're probably spending more.
Because everyone's
on
having
their
to upgrade
anyways.
Their connection to be able to actually play the game because the amount of bandwidth that DRM takes up. Anyway,
so I think the what was funny though is that today we have Gabe Newell, the savior of PC gaming, and he had some comments, and we had posted an article kind of similar to this a while back, but he had a talk, an interview, I think at Cambridge, and And talking about, you know, why piracy is an issue, and he basically says that it's not an issue for Valve. And he, you know, again, Gabe Newell coming out with some rational discourse instead of just ridiculous, exaggerated figures, basically saying that, you know, you need to make a product that's better than what the pirates can offer you. You know, if you region lock your content, or if you, you know, if you try to inhibit what the customers are going to get, they're going to get it anyway. And I thought what Bart said was really interesting and not something I'd really thought about before. But really, every PC game is free. You know, if someone wants it to be free, it's going to be free. Mm-hmm. So make it worth their while to pay for it, and that's what Steam does.
Yep. Yeah, I totally agree. I think, I mean, if you're working, it's funny because if you're working at Ubisoft, I was talking to Dan. Once again, obviously you can tell me and Dan just G-chat all the time, but we do. And I was like, does anyone at Ubisoft, like, do they have a PR department? Like, does some, like, they can't look at that and be like, I'm glad you said that. I'm glad you said that 95% of people that would be potential customers would steal our game anyway. Like, I mean, anyway, like,
yeah, like, who at Ubisoft thinks it's a good idea to constantly be disparaging your market?
Unless they just they're just going to decide, unless like the direction they're going is like, we're just not, we don't care about PC.
Maybe this is just their graceful exit from PC, just as in general.
Exactly, they're like, we're done, so we're going to just, you know, we're gonna throw this stuff at you while we leave. I don't know, maybe it is, but
in the end, it's all okay because I live in Montreal now. So when I walk by the Ubisoft building, I spit on them. So
in the end, it doesn't even matter. You're correct.
No. Yeah, yeah. Why was it telling me the call died? It didn't die, did it?
No, nothing died.
That's weird. Right, it told me trying to get the call back. I'm so
didn't
good.
Die for me.
All right. All right.
Grenade on my bosom.
Let's get to the Twitter questions. So that was mainly the news, like you said, John. That we didn't really touch on the WoW patch much. But do you know off the top of your head? I didn't really look this up, but what
it involves?
Well, yeah. What actually?
New raid called Dragon Soul. You'll be killing Deathwing. You know. For once, I think that they might not institute like a really stupid raid instance at the end of the expansion that nobody cares about, like they've done with every X-Pack so far. Like they'll show the commercials, you know, it'll be like all about the Lich King, and then at the end of the fucking expansion pack, they just put Halley on in the game. It doesn't really make any sense. But I think that maybe this time Deathwing will actually be the real last raid encounter, which is good. They put in something called transmogrification, which means you can go through the old game, you know, vanilla WoW or whatever it is, collect your old gear, and then take your current gear and make it look like the old gear, which is a super cool little addition that I actually am playing and doing right now. I'm going to go do Blackwing Lair after this podcast.
Nice.
New Darkmoon Fair, new upgraded shit, new items, new mounts, all kinds of cool WoW stuff that they do with every patch that people get excited for a week and a half like I do, and then don't play the game again until the next one.
Nice.
But I'm excited for it.
Sweet.
You can tell that the Dude Pow Guild is very active when there's nobody online on new patch day, which is why I'm going to transfer a character horde somewhere that's really populated.
No one's on the Dude Pow right now?
Nobody's online right now on a patch day, so I think that's a sign it's time to go to Illidan with Zugger Brandon and going.
I think that's a sign that there's a ton of good games out right now that aren't WoW.
Yeah, that's true, but you know what? I like bread.
Bread's good.
Well, you showed him.
I have more subscribers. I don't need to show him anything.
You're already,
your penis?
I was about to say.
I should have dunked as my penis today. Well, I texted him a picture of my balls.
Wow. Did you really? I've heard you done it at the hutch already. All right, let's move on.
Are you unwilling to pay the international charges? Why haven't I seen your balls yet?
Alex, no one cares about Canada. Okay, I'm just kidding.
I'll text you a picture of my hockey stick. It'll probably get you more aroused anyway.
How about your Stanley Cup trophies?
Yeah, when's the last time you seen one of those, Alex?
I wasn't born yet. That's okay, though. Third in the league.
I've been born for
2 points
for three
back
Cups.
Pittsburgh. We're all good.
Nice.
Yeah, 2 points back of a team that was lacking the best player in the world for all but the last three games. Awesome. Okay, anyway, on to the next one.
Yes, so we're good with the news. Let's do the Twitter questions as we always do, and there's a lot of them.
And now it's time for Twitter questions with the KB Mod Podcast.
Very few of them relevant to gaming at all, as is typical, but I want to start out with one from Voltage Z, who was asking us, what is the favorite game of the year for us so far, or favorite games, he also says, plural. So if we want to choose a couple, I mean, right off the bat, Skyrim is one that's just glaring, just from all the time I'm spending with that.
Call of Duty 4?
Call of Duty 4 for Game of the Year. Wow, okay.
I'm going to have to go, I mean, even though it was just on this podcast, it might not be the game I play the most. Mm. It might not be the game that I have the most fun with, but I'm probably going to have to say that Tribes is probably right up nice. There with Skyrim for me.
Nice.
I think I'd go with, I won't say Tribes Ascend only because it hasn't really been released yet, and it'll count for Game of the Year 2012. But obviously, if it had been released this year, that would be my game. But I'll say Battlefield 3, just because the Frostbite 2 engine is incredible. And, you know, for once people can start getting it on discounts, like, they're, you know, it was $30 over Black Friday and stuff. I mean, that's... Maybe for some people it won't be worth $60, but that's to me, even though I haven't played it all that much, it's been easily worth it just for the graphical experience alone.
If you guys can't tell, Brandon is really, really fond of flashlights. Huge fan of flashlights.
Yeah.
Like when I was down there in Dallas, like his house, just so many flashlights. So that's why he's choosing Battlefield for Game of the Year.
Yeah, I just have like really bright like halogen bulbs all over my apartment.
You can't even see in his house.
Yeah, and I actually refused to turn them off. John had to sleep with the lights on.
Wow, Brink.
Oh, bravo.
Bravo. Well played. Well,
yeah, I did not see Brink coming there. I was gonna say Modern Warfare 3 on the PS3 myself, but. Right.
What a Brink. solid.
Yeah, actually, I take it back. Battlefield 3 is garbage. Brink.
Brink. Brink overall. Every year for the rest of our lives.
The only thing better than Brink is a Brink patch.
The patch is better than the game itself?
Mm-hmm.
You better watch competitive Brink at QuakeCon and everybody fucking leaves. Place is packed for Quake Live Finals and then everybody leaves.
Yeah, there's like free food and balls and stuff, and you can't even keep people in the room because it was so bad.
Did you say free food and balls?
Balls.
Yeah, balls. Yeah.
I'm so excited for next year. Wow.
And there's fucking free beer right outside too. They're just giving you away free tap beer, and people were leaving anyways because it was Brink.
Wow.
God, I hope they don't have Brink at QuakeCon this year.
All
right. BioShock speedruns will replace it.
I'd probably rather watch it.
We have one from Meds Boss who says, "How scared are you right now?"
Oh my god, I'm so scared.
Oh my god, so scared.
So scared.
good answer. High Tech Josh says, "How can I tell if my PC is on or off? There's no button that glows to tell me." Sad face. I don't know how to help him with that, guys. I don't know what to say.
I'm pretty sure I've seen him in the KB Mod vent, so I think it's on.
Mm. Okay.
I would say stick your finger in the case fan, and if it gets chopped off, it's on.
Strong Twitter name from this guy, Guy with Hair 102. is this Twitter handle. And he said, "What if Team Fortress 2 ran on Windows 98? That's his question.
That'd be a good thing.
That would be great, yeah. If
does it not?
Still
doesn't
rocking in 98 nowadays.
It would definitely requires XP.
Forget Half-Life 3. We need to petition Gabe Newell for that.
Yeah. Get your game to run on archaic operating systems. It'd be great. This is a great one. This is another good one from, I just said one from Med's Boss, but he had another one. Bud Light Lime or Year Old Dog Piss?
Bud Light Lime.
Oh, really, dude? No way. I thought if people
you
were
didn't say that I couldn't like pour the one can of Bud Light Lime into like a gallon of some other type of delicious beverage.
Yeah, no, I don't think so. I think you have to drink it straight up. Year old dog piss is pretty awful, but I mean Bud Light Lime to me I can't.
I was gonna say maybe if it was fresh, but year old, I think that's a little much,
a little stale.
I would chase the Bud Light Lime with your old dog piss. Because you want the aftertaste, you know?
Yeah.
In the back of your throat, you want that year old dog piss. You don't want that Bud Light Lime.
Charlie Tango asks, when will Intel start hiking prices?
It's already happening.
Probably won't go, like, ridiculously high, but...
It'll be gradual. I mean, honestly, you know, I've been surprised just with how benevolent Intel has been with Sandy Bridge. I mean, Sandy Bridge is very affordable for the performance, so who knows?
And I think we'll go with our final question. There's a lot of them, but a lot of them aren't even questions. They're just statements. Brandon, this one's just for you, so are you ready? Are you ready for this?
Probably not.
Prep your answer. Does Volition sit down? This is from, I'm sorry, this is from Childish Samurai, who says, does Volition sit down and write out what he's going to say in his commentary?
No, he takes a pause.
You always seem well spoken and have some of the best commentaries on YouTube, so he gives you a compliment, but he wants to know how it's done. I'm not making this up. Look it up, Childish Samurai.
He pauses the video and goes and sits down and masturbates and has sex.
He's a very well thought out. Well, actually, let's let Brandon answer. Brandon, I want to hear how you're going to handle this.
I do a few takes, and if I'm rambling on, I just don't, you know, I re-record it. But okay, I definitely don't write down. I don't write down everything I'm going to say, but I just make a little, you know, a little list of topics and go from that.
What you guys have to understand about Brandon is he's probably one of the most insane perfectionists I've ever met, even though I haven't met him in real life. Watching him put thermal paste on his CPU for 4 hours during his live stream solidified that. And so what's amazing is how fluid his commentary sound with how much of a perfectionist he is. So I have to give you that compliment because they do
it's fuck. Well.
Brandon wants to explain to me how he does his commentaries, and I'm still laughing.
Because our version of it is, you know, I don't think I've ever, maybe twice I've ever recorded twice. Like, I just, you know, you do one take, which is, you know, probably why I'm so bad at it, but yeah, that's what happens. And Alex, actually, what are you laughing about, dude? You have some of the most verbose commentaries on YouTube. So,
I was going to say, you should be proud of me, Alex.
Yeah.
I'm trying to elevate the discourse on YouTube.
You would read essays in your videos.
Alex does two different styles, though. Like, his girls one he posted the other day, it was just, like, normal.
Right.
And then he has, like, the really stupid ideas. And the really stupid ideas are, like, definitely written and thought out. But they're fucking awesome.
Yeah, exactly.
Mm-hmm. YouTube.com/RavageOger.
Check it out.
And, one video every 6 months. Get on that shit, bros.
Check it out.
Yeah, I just bought a KB Mod t-shirt with the YouTube money I made from last 6 months.
Nice.
Be yeah. Reimbursed, bro.
I know.
And also, you also fixed your motherboard issue,
my
right?
My motherboard, yes. I haven't publicly thanked... Well, I have publicly thanked John, but John and Brandon... Not you, Scott. I don't know what you do. But
yeah,
John and Brandon... decided it was my motherboard, and it was, and my PC starts fine, and my Fraps doesn't lag anymore, so it's easier to make videos, and riveting...
That motherboard was all kinds of shot. Sounds like a bad SATA controller.
It was.
Everything's all fucked. Piece of bad. Shit. That's why you should have let me pick your parts for you instead of your buddy Bass Nectar or whatever his name is. Nice guy. Nice guy.
Oh, poor Bass Nectar.
There's Bass Gaming. Lawrence is my good friend. Shout out to Bass. Lawrence. But yeah.
I knew his name was Bass Gaming, by the way. I just wanted to make a Bass Nectar
reference. Strong. All right, bros. Well, we're at about an hour 30, so I think we're going to end episode 20.
I was here for like 20 minutes. Awesome.
Yeah. Well, you know, you made it in max 20 minutes.
20.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, it's a sign. You missed, John. Scott was really surprised that we're on episode 20.
Yeah, I was.
Holy shit. Yeah, fuck.
Actually, I don't think I said one thing about it, Alex. Thanks a lot.
Yeah, but you
now...
telepathically sent it to me, you nerd.
Probably did. We're close like that. All right, so we're going to end this now. Thanks for listening.
I'm gonna go do the new five mans.
And John's gonna raid. So
no new five mans.
Okay.
Laters.
All right, see you guys.
Man.
Hello, gents, and thanks once again for tuning into the podcast this week. If you need to find the podcast, you can find it on podbean.com, our front page, or search iTunes for KB Mod. If you need your PC gaming fixed during the week, you can go to kbmod.com or follow us on Twitter @kbmodgaming. We'll see you next week, guys.